Welcome along to the Matchbook Betting Podcast, the show dedicated to bringing you betting insights to help you make smarter and more informed bets. I'm Emmett Kennedy, joined as usual, live from Vegas by Matchbook's big bet expert, Mr. Jesse May.
Unfortunately not, Emmett.
What? What do you mean? He said he was going to be on. It said it didn't matter if it was 4 a.m. He would be awake and he would be on the show.
He's let us down, Emmett. Last scene, I spoke to Jesse on Monday. Said he gave me his tip of the week. So a tip of the week in the tennis, he said, sell the total games, Nadal Muller. Not too sure how it ended up, but I think it went to five sets in the end. But so I don't
know. Hence why he was never heard from again.
Hasn't been heard from since, no.
Okay.
Spotted in Vegas with John Part, but not too sure. Unconfirmed sightings.
Jesse May is currently, for real, this is not a joke, commentating on darts in Las Vegas.
Yeah, true story.
He's had to abandon us. For a week, maybe two. But we are in the capable hands of Matchbook's second big bet expert, Mr. Aidan Barry. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Junior big bet expert.
Yeah. The junior big bet expert. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about Wimbledon, which we just mentioned with Mark Stitchkin. We'll also talk about the weekend's golf with Ollie Noonan. First of all, though, Matchbook's horse racing expert, Andy Newton, joins us to preview some fantastic racing at Newmarket. We're recording this on Wednesday. And Andy will, first of all, talk about tomorrow's racing. We'll see the Coventry Stakes winner, Rajasingh. Rajasingh? Yeah, let's go with the pronunciation of Rajasingh. For Stevie Donohue and Richard Spencer, the Coventry Stakes winner, lining up over 6 furlongs. Do we have betting on Matchbook, Aidan?
Yeah, so the aforementioned Rajasingh, about 9-4, so 3.23 there on the exchange at the moment. Just the market, I suppose, is kind of still forming at the moment. Invincible Army, 15-2. Sound and Silence 8-1 for the boys in blue. Car Chip 12s, US Navy Flag 14s, and for bigger the best. So it's 14s bar there then.
Yeah, like US Navy Flag did bomb behind Rajasingh and then came out and won afterwards. So I suppose you could say that the form has been somewhat franked. I just would be inclined to take this one on, Andy. Am I right or completely bonkers?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think I had a look this morning and it was more like sort of 6-4, 7-4. So there is a slight drift happening already. I think Aidan said it's probably what, about 9-4.
Yeah, it's
at the moment,
around 9-4, Andy, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's an interesting one because, I mean, it's trained by Richard Spencer, based in Newmarket. Not a lot of people would have known much about him, but, you know, obviously one of these ones. If it was trained by one of the big guy trainers, then, you know, probably would be nearer the sort of 5-4, 6-4 mark. Yes, it's 2 from 2, won the Coventry last time out, but I just think, yeah, it has to give £3 away because it won that race to all the others. And, you know, did it have a hard race that day? You know, I think it probably did. It looked to be, you know, in a bit of a battle, didn't it? You know, it looked impressive, don't get me wrong, but I don't think I'd be touching it around sort of 2-1, 9-4.
So I guess the question then is, who do we oppose the horse with?
Well, there's some interesting stats on this race, Emmett, okay? And the main one really to focus in on is trainer Richard Hannon, okay? He's got a fantastic record in this race, won it 6 times. In the last 15 runnings, yeah. So, you know, almost a, you know, about 40% strike rate in the race, and he's just got the one this year, Denar, and obviously on form, that was well behind the favourite Rajasingh in the Coventry. I think it was about 7 lengths, maybe 8 lengths behind it. So it's got plenty to find on that, but you know, it won quite well a couple of times before that. Frankie Dettori's back on, and that could be the key. He wasn't on it at Ascot. Obviously, he was out, wasn't he? Injured for that meeting. I think, I can't remember who rode it now. It might have been Pat Smullin. But, you know, no disrespect to Mr. Smullin. But I think, you know, Frankie back on here. I think, you know, getting the £3 as well fits plenty of the trends. Frankie's ridden it 2 from 2 now. With wins at Newbury and Chelmsford before that. And I think, you know, 14-1, it just sort of catches the eye there, you know, especially based on the trends, Emmett.
We've got a bit of 16-1, I think, win only there on Matchbook. So, yeah, 17.0, they're available, Andy. So, yeah, Frankie, you're bang on. Smullin rode the last time in Royal Ascot, and Frankie's back on tomorrow.
All right, Frankie back from injury. He's going to have a huge ride in the Irish Oaks on Saturday as well on the John Gosden-trained Enable. Denar, the selection for Thursday. Friday, the feature race is the Falmouth Stakes. Now, this is going to be a less than impressive renewal of this race, I think it needs to be said. We don't exactly have the great hope and the great hype of horses that we've had in years gone by. Aidan O'Brien's Roly Poly, who's been runner-up to the Superstar Winter on her last two starts, heads the betting. To be fair to Roly Poly, she's got very good form, as she's shown last time out, and also she was a very good juvenile as well. She's a war front, so proving that these war fronts do indeed train on. The betting on Matchbook, Aidan?
Yeah, so obviously just the seven runners kind of declared here, so it's kind of a perfect one for Matchbook win only here. So yeah, we've got Roly Poly 9-4, so 3 point, just over 9-4, 3.3, 3-1, so 4.0 Sea of Grace. Wahida 7-2, Arabian Hope 5-1, and then 14-1 Greta. Might as well go through them all now. Delectation 16s and Opal Tiara 40-1.
Yeah, about
50-1. So. Yeah, I said just the seven runners. So Neil Channing's in Vegas, but I'm sure the boys are on, kind of ready to rock. But no need here.
No need. There'll be no each way thievery in this race. Aidan O'Brien won this race last year with the incredibly well backed Alice Springs. In the context of last year's race, Roly Poly heads the betting for him this time around. Can he follow up again, Andy? Or are you inclined to take the Daughter of War front on?
Well, I think, you know, a bit like the other race we talked about on the Thursday, I think the bookies will probably be trying to get this one beat as well. I mean, yeah, the main sort of factors against it, I mean, you know, yes, Aidan O'Brien won the race last year, but he's actually got a pretty bad record in the race. I think that's the only time he's ever won it last year, which is slightly surprising. Mm-hmm. You know, things in its favour. I mean, 11 of the last 15 winners of the Falmouth ran at Ascot last time out. And, you know, of the big four in this race, she's the only one that ticks the, you know, running at Royal Ascot last time out trend. But, yeah, the trip's a bit of an issue. It's never won over a mile. You know, its form figures over this trip, 9-6, 2-2. You know, a lot of people are going to latch onto it after the, you know, the run last time out in the Coronation Stakes against Winter, like you mentioned, Emmett. But I just think that, yeah, it just doesn't win enough, does it, for me, no. Roly Poly? And I think, you know, at the prices, you've got sort of three or four others there to take it on with. And, you know, I'll be sort of playing this one, the lay market again.
And to be fair, Andy, like, she's a great story in the sense that Aidan O'Brien has had the 1-2-3 in the Irish 1,000 guineas and in the Coronation Stakes at Royal Ascot this season, which is a remarkable achievement in itself. And she plays her part in that. The only thing is that Winter was devastatingly impressive in both of those. So it's not like she's really pushed Winter closely. She's been well held. So if you're going to take her on, who are you leaning towards?
Well, it's really just sort of three others, isn't it, really, looking at the betting. I mean, Sea of Grace, the Haggis horse, that was, you know, the former John Ox-trained horse. And, you know, that was second in the French 1,000 guineas, I think, last time. But, the ground there was very, very soft. So, you know, that would be my only issue there. It was fifth in the Nell Gwynn earlier in the season as well. So, you know, if there is a rain, I haven't really checked the forecast. I don't know if there is any due rain around the Newmarket area. But if it does come, that will be interesting, Sea of Grace. But, you know, I think the play is probably just to side with the two Godolphin horses. I mean, I'm not quite sure. I can't remember what the betting said from Aidan. But, you know, if you can get sort of 4-1 on both of them, Arabian Hope and Wahida, then, you know, these are the ones I'll be sort of taking on. Yeah, the last one, Charlie Appleby, decent record at the track, decent strike rate. This one's obviously very interesting, 2 from 2, could be anything, hasn't been out for a while, course winner, and also won over a mile. You know, it's actually the highest rated horse in the race as well, Emmett, you know, on a mark of 114. So, you know, the Charlie Appleby team is sure to have this one wound up, and I think, you know, that could be the value against Roly Poly.
That's the shorter of the two Godolphin ones, Andy, as you said. Yeah, it's about just under 4-1, and then the Binsaroor one is about 5-1. I think Roly Poly has a won since this meeting last year, I'd say. Would that be right?
Yeah, I think you're right with that.
A win,
yeah.
So,
wasn't it Bravana beat her? Like, she does have good form in the sense that she finished in front of Lady Aurelia, but Lady Aurelia bled that day, and Bravana beat her. To be fair, the horse that you just selected, Wahida, is a Group 1 winner from Arkdale last season in the Prix Marcel Buzac. So, as you said, like, Charlie Appleby's horses, there's no fear of them making their seasonal reappearance. They will be fit, and his stable is in red hot form as well. So I'd be well with you there. That is the Tattersall's Falmouth Stakes, the feature race on day 2 of the Newmarket July meeting and the feature race of the entire weekend. Now, I should, being an Irishman, say it's the Irish Oaks of the Curragh.
Non-event,
we could try and say it's the John Smith's Cup, but really, the feature race arguably of the summer is the Darley July Cup Stakes. This is going to be an absolute speed fest. We've got Caravaggio, who's a dual Group 1 winner, winning the Phoenix Stakes last season and the Commonwealth Cup last time out. That completed a Royal Ascot double for him, and this son of the late great Scat Daddy looks an absolute speed demon. He will take on Harry Angel again, who a lot of people were feeling was a little bit harried by Intelligence Cross, who is in the lineup again to do that job, you would imagine. L'Amato, last year's winners in this race as well. This promises to be a sensational race. The betting on Matchbook, Aidan.
Yeah, just getting up to Harry Angel really set it up for Caravaggio at Royal Ascot. I thought they probably overdid it a touch.
I completely agree with that.
But yeah, obviously Newmarket's a bit of it's a quicker undulating track, more undulating track, I suppose. But yeah, I don't know. I'll leave Andy to decide what he fancies. But yeah, the betting on Matchbook, we're looking at about 6-5, so just over 2.2 Caravaggio, 5-1 L'Amato, 6-1 Harry Angel, 6-1 the Tin Man, and then 9-1 Taz Leet, and then 16s Bar.
It surprises me that Harry Angel isn't entered for the Nunthorpe Stakes, because I thought that would be the race that would really suit him, dropping back to 5 furlongs. But they might very well decide, Godolphin, to supplement him for that race later in the season. I think the fact that this is an undulating track and that there's a bit of an incline will actually suit Caravaggio, because stamina seemed to really come into play towards the end. But he's got the speed, he's clearly got the talent, and in my view, Andy, he's going to take the world a beating on Saturday.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, you know, the highest rated in the race at 1.22 anyway, but obviously getting £6, isn't he, as well from the older horses. Yeah, Harry Angel gets the weight as well, but I think everything's just going to be set up. I agree. I don't know why Harry Angel isn't going for the Nunthorpe. That looks sort of tailor made over 5 furlongs. But you know, Aidan O'Brien is no sort of secret. He's already said this is the fastest horses he's trained. I think it clocked to 45 miles an hour the other day, didn't it, or something on the gallops or whatever. So you know, he's actually won this race 3 times before as well, with Stravinsky, Mozart, and remember Star Spangled Banner in 2010. And you know, the first two mentioned of those winners from Aidan O'Brien were both 3-year-olds. So you know, he knows he's not frightened to take on the older horses with these speed balls. And really, you know, if you're looking for something to take it on with, I mean, it's very difficult to find any sort of chinks in its armour, isn't it? You know, Ryan Moore's on board, it's 6 from 6, it's won on a variety of different ground, it's getting £6, it's already beaten Harry Angel. I mean, you know, all it's got to do is just beat some of the older horses. And you know, the Tin Man and, you know, L'Amato and Tasley, they sort of finished in a bit of a heap, didn't they, in the Jubilee? And you know, I think they'll finish in that sort of order again behind Caravaggio, Emmett.
I'm completely in agreement with you here. Aidan, do you want to add anything to the July Cup selections?
No, Andy answered it himself. I was going to ask about, I suppose, the pick of the older horses, and he answered that with the Tin Man. I suppose it was, I thought it was pretty impressive in the Jubilee with Tom Queeley back on board. But as I said, I would maybe have the opinion that, as I kind of opened with, that it was kind of, the race was kind of made up for Caravaggio in Royal Ascot, that Harry Angel kind of set it up for him in ways, and I actually thought that the track might suit Harry Angel a bit more, but Emma seems to disagree.
Hey, listen, it's a game of opinions. You could be right, I could be right, who knows?
I'd probably not be right at all.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, the Tin Man, yeah, in theory, the race is going to be sort of set up for him as well, isn't it? You know, if Harry Angel goes out in front, and you know, that does look the most interesting of those three. I think, you know, Tasley. I mean, the only thing is, I was looking back on the Tin Man's form, and it is a bit crazy. It hasn't backed up a win since, I think it might have been its sort of 2-year-old, 3-year-old days. But you go back on its form, it's one, then not one, one, not one, one, not one, one, not one, one. And then, so, you know, if it carries on that sequence again, then, you know, it's just, does it find it hard following up, you know, victories? But, you know, of the older ones, the Tin Man for me, but I can't really see past Caravaggio.
It's never on a Newmarket, I'm pretty sure. I think I read that earlier. The Tin Man's never
on a Newmarket. Yeah, you're right, never raced there.
I know that you were taken with his performance in the Diamond Jubilee. I just can't help but feel that Caravaggio is one of these horses, and Harry Angel as well, that we're in for a new world order here with these speedballs. And Caravaggio won't remain in training. Harry Angel may very well do so. In fact, I'd be surprised if he didn't. And I just think it's ripe for one of these 3-year-olds to come through, and I think it's going to be Caravaggio. It's the most obvious thing to say, but it just looks as though we're about to see a new world order of sprinters.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the story in the race would be, you know, L'Amato won it last year, and you know, the big sort of talking point is the jockey, isn't it, Harry Bentley, back on board You know, got jocked off, didn't he?
But the mental scar for him, Andy. He'll remember the torment of Dubai. It's going to be too much for him when Harry steps up on him.
Yeah, but, you know, these things have a sort of funny knack of cropping up, don't they? A bit like, you know, last week with the eclipse and the whole Jim Crowley issue with that one. But, you know, you never know. I mean, at the end of the day, the horse has still got to put it in. It's the reigning champ. We can't dismiss it totally. Yeah. You know, there was all that hoo-ha in the last race, wasn't it, in the Jubilee with the stewards' inquiry as well. So, you know, some people are of the opinion that, you know, the result may have changed if there wasn't that sort of semi-interference and stuff. But, you know, for me, I'm not so sure, really.
Andy, you're going to be writing content for the Matchbook betting site during the weekend. Is there anything else you want to mention before we wrap up?
No, it'll all be on there. I've already sent one over, so we should have tomorrow's Newmarket live races on there, the trends, and then some blurb around it. Okay. Again, you know, Friday as well. I think there's a race, I can't remember if it's on, might be on Friday at 3 o'clock. I'm not 100% sure of that, but just watch out for that one because Mark Johnson has got a cracking record in the race. He's won it, I think, for the last 4 years.
Ooh.
And he's got a couple in there. I'm not quite sure of the names now. It might be something like Tick-Tee Maffey or
That's
something
it. Yeah,
like
yeah.
that. It's won its last three or four on the spin, and I think Ryan Moore's been booked, which is interesting. So,
Paul, the Claire Rooney source. Yeah.
Yeah, he won it. Yeah, 1-2. Yeah, the last 4 years. Yeah.
Wow.
OT, even the big price last year, 25-1. Wrestling in 2016, Torchlighter in 2014, and Maputo in 2013.
Right, so, big win for Braveheart possibly on Friday as well.
I will just keep an eye because I think he might have another one in the race as well, a bit bigger price, about 10-12-1.
Okay.
Can't remember the name
Monticello,
of it again now, but
Monticello, Andy.
You know, the Johnson horse is worth looking out for in that race.
I'll make a positive note for Clemmie, Churchill's sister. She bombed at Royal Ascot, but she was hugely impressive last time out of the Curragh. She returns to England. She's going to run in the Duchess of Cambridge on Friday over 6 furlongs, and I think she will take the world
race that Roly Poly won last year.
Indeed. Well said, Aidan Barry. All of these races are live on ITV3 because of Wimbledon. They're also live on Racing UK. If you can't see them, I'll be on with Ray Stubbs on TalkSport or two on Friday and Saturday, so you can join us for commentary of the races then, and hopefully I'll be able to unearth a few winners and not make a complete fool of myself on TalkSport 2. Andy Newton, you can read more from Andy on insights.matchbook.com. Andy, it's a pleasure chatting to you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Cheers, Emmett. See you, Aidan.
See you, Andy.
So the Open is only a week away, but before we focus on that, it's a warm welcome back to the podcast to the Fairway Wedge on Twitter, Mr. Ollie Noonan.
Hi, Emmett. Thanks very much for having me.
Great to have you back on the show, Ollie, for your expert insight. This week, we're going to focus on the John Deere Classic, which has been held at the TPC Deer Run since 2000. And it has to be said, it's not exactly the deepest of fields.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. I think the highest ranked member of the official golf world rankings that's playing is Daniel Berger at 20th. And there's not really much depth either. There's only 17 of the world's top 100 playing. So it's a pretty weak field, all right.
Yeah, it's amazing when you consider there's $864,000 to the winner and $5.6 million up for grabs. But the Open lures all by the sounds of things. So, Aidan, take us through the betting on Matchbook.
Yeah, as you said, a pretty weak field. And I suppose because of that, it's probably Daniel Berger, who Ollie mentioned, is probably, I suppose, an uneasy favourite is probably...
Yeah.
Probably the right term there, but so it's like 14-1 the field. So Berger 14s, Brian Harman 20s, Charlie Hoffman 22s, Danny Lee 22s, Kevin Kistner 22s, Kyle Stanley, Steve Stricker's got an unbelievable record here. I'm sure Ollie might touch on in a while. It is available at 25s. Zach Johnson 28.
He's the course record, doesn't he, Stricker?
Ollie will know that.
I think that was actually Paul Goydos. He shot a 59 here in 2010. So there's not many 59s that have ever been made on tour, but Stricker has got a phenomenal record. The last man to win 3 consecutive tournaments on the tour was Stricker. So he's a pretty decent record here.
Yeah, Stricker has it for 72 holes, and Goydos has it. He shot a 59. Oh!
59,
Paul
exactly.
Goydos. Where is Paul Goydos now?
Almost as good as me that day in Rotorock. No, it never happened.
The pigeon popcorn.
59 over 9 holes, I wouldn't be too far off, I'd say.
that is me. That is me over 9 holes. Okay, so considering the fact that we don't have the usual top 4 to dominate the market, and when the market is that more open, how do you approach the betting on a tournament like this?
Well, generally speaking, I'd be looking down the field for a bit of tasty value. But when looking at this tournament and kind of assessing the kind of lower reaches of the tour, just so many of the players are really terrible that kind of all signs, unfortunately, point to the top of the market. You know, if you look at this tournament over the last 10 years, I think there's been only one instance when there's been a winner longer than 40-1, which sounds funny when you think that, you know, the game's biggest names aren't here. To be fair, the winner at 40-1 was Jordan Spieth, but it was his first ever win on tour in 2013. So even then, the winner was, you know, someone who was a pretty quality player. But, you know, when you're looking at some of these names from the web.com tour that have never really done much on that tour and somehow they've got a spot start on the PGA Tour, or some of the older names that have struggled to keep their card over the last few years, you're kind of just thinking they're here to make up the numbers and hope to nick a few grand by making the cut. So I'm mainly focusing at the top of the market here, even in spite of the kind of the relative lack of strength at the top of the market. But
How motivated do you think guys like, I know Berger's top of the market, so Berger's obviously playing in the Open next week. How motivated are those guys, I suppose, like, for this tournament, I suppose, in your opinion?
I think that that's a really good question. I think for someone like Daniel Berger, he's probably not too bothered about this tournament, and he's thinking more about next week and looking to have a bit of a tune-up. And I'd say probably similar to a few of the guys at the kind of top of the market here. I suppose where the motivation comes is that if you're unqualified for the Open next week and you finish in the top five here, you will get an invite into next week's tournament at Royal Birkdale. So for some of the kind of lesser lights who, you know, want to get a major championship start under their belt, there's probably more incentive for them to be finishing in the top five than there would be for someone like Berger to be kind of on a Sunday looking to push into that top five if he's not really in contention.
So pardon the terrible golf pun, but in terms of betting, how many swings are you going to take at this?
Just the three this week. I've got two kind of strong fancies, if you like, and one slightly more speculative one. So you know, two that we're gonna be laying up with, and one that we'll be trying to make an eagle with, if you like.
Oh, the golf puns continue.
Control and F job here.
Welcome back to the Golf Pun Podcast.
Brilliant.
Okay, let's go. Your first one on the tee. God almighty.
We need to stop this, don't we? Okay, so the first pick, and I think this is a pretty strong pick this week, is Kyle Stanley. So it seems like a pretty straightforward pick as well, in my opinion. He's coming off a win in his last tournament, and he's previously had a runner-up finish here as well. So, you know, he's got both current form and previous course form. Alongside the win in his last tournament at the Quicken Loans, he's also had two other top six finishes in his last 6 weeks. So he's clearly in really good nick. And his game just sets up really well for this course. So we didn't really touch upon kind of what's required to compete at Deer Run. But really, it's a course where making sure that you're accurate into the greens, hitting a lot of greens and giving yourself a lot of opportunities is really important. For the last kind of 10 years, the average score has been about minus 20, so 20 under par. So people that make a lot of birdies tend to be very, very successful here, and it's a kind of prerequisite to contending. Mm. So I'm looking for people that not only are hitting a lot of greens, so they're giving themselves a lot of putting opportunities, but also people that do make a lot of birdies. And there's a par breaker stat, which I like to use, which essentially is the number of times that you're kind of making a birdie or an eagle on each hole. And Kyle Stanley is second in the field in that particular stat as well. So he's making plenty of birdies and tends to kind of year on year. Alongside that, he's also a really strong scrambler. So when you miss the green, being able to get up and down and kind of exercise your short game is really important. And I feel that in this kind of relatively limited field, I think that kind of odds around 25-1 represent fair value. And I'd say that he's a good bet to go very well this week.
Yeah, there's plenty of 25s there, and there's actually a bit of 28-1 there. If you're quick, there's a good bit of 25-1 there, but there's actually a bit of 28-1 there available on Matchbook.
Okay, so Stanley possibly at 28 is the first selection. That's your big pick of the week. Who is your first alternative?
The first alternative is Brian Harman. So again, he's kind of not going to be someone who's a kind of particularly left field pick. I think he'll be very popular with people who are looking to get on board this week. Yeah. And he's another one who's similar to Stanley, is in a really rich vein of form. Similar to Stanley, he's won a tournament in his last six events, and he's finished in the top five or two other tournaments, probably most notably at the US Open a few weeks back, where you might remember that he was actually leading going into the final day.
Yeah.
And it was only Brooks Koepka who kind of put in that just outstanding real final 18 performance to kind of take the title away from him. But Harman definitely looks like a man on the rise. Over the last few years, he's been super consistent. And this seems to be very much a kind of career year for him. And in a field like this, I feel, again, that he's someone that, you know, we should be looking to get on board with. Interestingly, his first PGA Tour win was at this track a few years ago now. I think it was 2012 when he won here.
2014, I think, Ollie, according to my stats.
You were probably right. Yeah, 2014.
Beat Zach Johnson by a stroke.
Better prepared.
I'm sorry, are these stats or is this Wikipedia?
It's a bit of a mix.
So yeah, 2014. We're not going back as long as I thought. So yeah, a great previous course form here as well. He's got another top ten here, I should say, alongside that previous win. So again, great course form, great recent form, and just a great statistical makeup for this. So he's a really good scrambler. He's not fantastic in the greens and regulation stats, but he's about middle of the pack for this tournament. But given his kind of current form, I think that he's probably trending upwards in that regard. But also, he's a fantastic putter, so he leads the strokes game putting category of those in the field this week. And again, he's someone who makes a lot of birdies and eagles. So he's third in the field in the par breaker stats. So it's kind of hard to ignore him this week. And I think again, anything kind of 16-1 and above is well worth a bet.
Yeah, 18-1 there on Matchbook at the moment, Ollie. Yeah.
Okay, so 18s for the lefty Harman, and your third pick for the John Deere Classic.
Yeah, the third pick's a little bit more left field, and it's a little bit more of a kind of field player, if you like, and it's a guy called Michael Kim. So I've been following Kim since his time on the web.com tour. Primarily, what I like to do is often try and get ahead of the game by seeing the kind of next batch of professional golfers liking and trying to get on board with them early. So guys like John Rahm, looking to try and get on board with them before they start going into the kind of odds that they're going into and winning at, like he did last week at around about 14s. And Michael Kim, in my opinion, is possibly a guy that may end up not having as successful a career as Rahm is going to have, but certainly being a really solid tour pro who has multiple wins. He was the College Player of the Year, I think, in 2013, and that's a previous accolade that's been won by loads of really kind of consistent tour pros, including Ryan Moore, who won here last year, Justin Thomas, who is a big personal favourite of mine, Russell Henley, Bill Haas, Kevin Chappell have all won it in the last 10 years, and they're people that they've got multiple tour wins behind them. So, you know, there's good pedigree there for people that win that particular award. In terms of his kind of body of work to date on the tour, he's only been playing on the tour less than 2 years full time, but he's got a couple of top fives already, and he's had a couple of top. Well, a few top 20s this year. But what interests me most about him is that he seems to be trending in the right direction with his form. So in the last kind of four tournaments that he's played, he's gone from missed cuts to tied for 69th, tied 35th, tied 29th. And what was particularly interesting about that performance at the Greenbrier last week where he tied 29th was that he finished in really superb form, going 69, 67 over the weekend, and actually had one of his best statistical weeks of his career, in that he hit the third most fairways he's ever hit over the course of his career, and he was hitting 71% of his greens in regulation, which is kind of elite for a kind of greens in regulation stat. So if he brings that form into this week and putts pretty well, and he is a good putter, he ranks in the top 20% of this field in strokes gained putting, then at three-figure odds, he could be an interesting outsider. He made the cut here last year on his debut, finishing 47th, and included in that 47th, he did shoot a, I think it was a second round, oh no, third round, 66. So, you know, he's clearly got a little bit of form around here as well. So I think, as I say, at three-figure odds, he's someone I'm going to be chancing a small bet on this week in what is, as we've said, a very weak field.
What I love about this pick is the fact that Aidan had to scroll and scroll and keep scrolling down and keep scrolling down, and then eventually he got to his price.
Yeah, someone told me about controlling F there during the weekend, so it was a bit easier than that. I saw about 125 available, kind of, I suppose, in your traditional sports. Oh, 140 yes. to 1 on Matchbook Win Only. So yeah, we're coming out swinging with that one, all right.
The puns continue, by the way. I if you love puns, fantastic. If you don't, on behalf of Matchbook, I apologize. 140s, you're saying we can get win only a Matchbook.
140 win only, yeah.
That is absolutely spectacular. Ollie, in terms of a player, if you're going to look for something else, what is the key attribute that you're looking for in players this week?
So, as I say, I'm looking for people that just give themselves a lot of opportunities. So people that hit a lot of greens, make a lot of putts, and that make a lot of birdies is really what you're going to need. It's a pretty simple formula. But also the greens here are smallish, so that's why I think the scrambling stat is worth looking at. So just being on or around the greens and being able to get the ball in the hole sounds very, very simple, but that's pretty much the formula here. It's an easy track. But as I say, the people at the head of the market usually tend to come out on top on this particular tournament. One, there's a couple of names that I would mention as potential kind of back to lays,
yeah,
if you
go
like,
for
certain reasons. So Charles Howell, for example, he is a perennial kind of high finisher that can't get over the line. He holds the dubious, I think it's a, what is it, the most wins. Oh, actually, I'm going to have to look that one up. But basically, he's earned the most money on tour without a major win, I think, is the stat. And
that's all right,
that basically
though.
Kind of tells its own story. So he in his 15 years on tour, he's only got 2 wins, but he's got, you know, countless top fives and top tens. He actually lost a playoff a couple of weeks back to Daniel Berger.
Doesn't Angel Cabrera have this ridiculous record of having only won 2 tournaments and both of them were the Masters?
Yeah, not a bad record, that, is it?
That's all right. I'd take that.
That's a pretty good one to win.
Plus, I was looking up Brian Harman as you were speaking. He's won $4 million this year.
Yeah, it's not a bad life being a professional golfer, is it?
We should have been golfers.
Almost as much money as Neil Channing has won this year.
Yeah.
After his excellent Epsom.
Most of that made on Bernie Roy, which he keeps reminding me about.
It's stat time, or not stat time, but trivia time. Isn't the John Deere one where Michelle Wee played in a couple of years ago?
It was.
She was
invited. We must be going back over 10 years now, but yeah. I think that was the first time, well, at least one of the first couple of times that one of the LPGA players had tried to crack the PGA Tour. I'm not sure it went so well for her, but
she got a heat stroke or something one of the years. She played there a couple of times, but yeah.
I do remember her retiring before then. Yeah. But anyway.
I know you're fond of watching Michelle Wee anyway, Emmett. It's an oldie, but it's a goodie.
That edit is at 15:40.
You can edit that one.
What could Aidan have possibly said? Who'll know?
Edit that one out.
But the thing is, it was Aidan Barry who said it from Matchbook and not me or Ollie Noonan. Anybody else you want to mention from the point of view of a back to lay?
Yeah, absolutely. So the other one I was looking to mention from a back to lay perspective was Ches Reedy.
Yep.
So again, he is somebody who's been on tour for a long, long old time. He's got decent previous course form. He's finished 5th, but I'm just not sure he's got it in him to get over the line as a winner on tour anymore. But from a statistical perspective, he really rates pretty highly in my algorithm. He's actually ranked 6th in the algorithm, and he comes out at 66-1. I think on the exchange, I think it was the last time I looked, he may be a little bit longer than that actually now. So he's someone that I'd be looking to back at the price, and then potentially, if he's in contention on Sundays, to lay off. I think the likelihood is he will get shorter, but I don't really fancy him outright to win. So good back to lay investment, I reckon.
All right. Yeah, so Reeve, it's just around 60-1, and then Charles Taylor, you mentioned earlier, is about 40-1 at the moment there, Ollie. So
yeah.
And you're saying you're talking about the lay part,
looking
then
to get on now and looking to back them possibly on Saturday or Sunday if they're in contention is a pretty smart idea.
All right, okay. There's a 6-hour time difference between the UK and Ireland with Illinois. You can watch it all live this weekend on Sky Sports Mix just before Sky change all their channels. It's going to be Sky Sports Golf, Sky Sports Premier League.
Sky Sports, whatever it's called, Kabali or Kabati or whatever it's called.
Sky Sports Matchbook Betting Podcast. Who knows? There could be that as well. You never know. But Ollie Noonan, we will chat to you again next week to preview the Open. one, which I'm really looking forward to. That should be absolutely fantastic. But hopefully a bit of profit to be locked in this weekend before next week. Ollie, pleasure talking to you. You can follow Ollie on the tweet machine at Fairway Wedge, and we'll chat to you again next week.
Cheers, Ollie. Fun.
Thanks, gents.
On the final segment of this week's Matchbook Betting Podcast, we are going to talk about Wimbledon. We were in such a good position. I was talking to Aidan before we went on air, before we walked into the studio, saying, oh, we're in a great spot with Djokovic, aren't we? And I thought he was joking when he said, Djokovic just retired.
Yep.
Mark Stichcomb, are you there? Are you alive? Are you okay?
Yeah. I think we've experienced a lot of turmoil with Djokovic over the last 12 months, so nothing surprises us anymore, does it?
It was like, thank you for talking me out of my Nadal bet. First of all, you saved me money there. Secondly, Murray was gone. Yeah. It was all looking so well. Now, I know that he's had the shoulder injury. I know he's had problems, but to be fair, you put him up at a really big price, Djokovic. You made a really solid case for him, and unfortunately, I think you were making the point beforehand, before we just recorded, Mark, that it's not really the last 12 months that caught up with him. There's clearly some kind of physical issue with him this week.
Yeah, it looked like he just strained his shoulder. He had medical timeout against Mannarino. He was taking some painkillers after game one in that match, so it looks like he just strained himself, unfortunately. I'm probably more disappointed about our women's bets, to be honest. I was getting quite excited about those two there, Kerber and Svitolina. So I was disappointed that they both exited the tournament on Monday. But literally, you know, you take those 16 players on Monday, women's, and you could make a case for any of them to win it, such as the openness of the draw, as we discussed.
Okay, well, the game rolls on. We can jokingly talk about the men's semis later on, for those of you who want to have childish jokes. But first of all, let's talk about the women's semifinals. Lo siento, no hablo mucho español. Muguruza?
Gabin Muguruza.
Against Rabikova.
Yeah, close enough.
Now it'll do. In the women's semi-final, center court at 1 o'clock is the first one we'll talk about. And then the remarkable story of Venus Williams and Konta, which is another remarkable story as well. But first of all, Mark, your thoughts on the center court game at 1 o'clock. We'll get the betting on Matchbook from Aidan, first of all.
The aforementioned Gabin Muguruza, 1.43 mark, and then 3.3, just under 3.3 Rybakova. Handicap is 4 games. The total is around 21. Pick him either side of them.
Okay, so Muguruza and Rybakova, who are you leaning with, Mark Stichcomb?
Well, I think, as I sort of just said there, the women's side, I see a lot of these matches as coin flips. There's not a lot to choose between any of them, and that just was shown in the outright betting. You had so many people in sort of around about the 10 mark up to 20. You had about 10 or 11 people in that section, and I think there's so many more coin flips left to go in this competition. I think it's just shown. I mean, Venus Williams is only a slight outsider against Konta, and the head-to-head between Muguruza and Rybakova is 2 apiece. The last time they met was on the grass of Nottingham 2 years ago, and Rybakova won 6-3, 6-1. She's, after coming back from injury at the beginning of the year, she's having a fantastic grass court season. She won 18 of her 19 matches. I know the majority of those are on the ITF tour, but that was her sort of way of playing herself back into fitness. And it's, you know, it's never a bad thing to be picking up titles. She picked up one in Ilkley and one in Surbiton. She's already knocked out the favourite in Pliskova. She then beat the second favourite, Van der Vey, yesterday. So I see no reason why she can't do some damage to Muguruza, and I think she should be a lot shorter than the 3.3 available. And if you're going to back her at 3.3, I think you probably worthy taking some of the outright odds. She looks massive at sort of about 9.0 in the outright market.
Interesting angle. Okay.
Yeah, my point was only going to be, Muguruza, as I said, you kind of alluded to it, Mark, because she's probably the best player on tour when she plays well, but it's whether she plays well or not is the is
consistency
the issue.
Is key.
Yeah, I think the I said the only thing, and I was going to ask about the handicap is that I saw some stats. I think Muguruza has held her serve 90% of the time so far in the tournament. So that was kind of, I suppose, the only big barrier, I suppose, is, and she's serving really well. But you think Rybakina will be able to break through that, win a couple of games here and there, anyway, Mark?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Muguruza is going to be the one that comes in with all the pressure. I don't think Rybakina's got anything to lose. And I think Muguruza was a little bit fortunate to come through against Kerber because she was twice a breakdown in the final set. And I think if Kerber was a little bit more sort of battle hardened from perhaps playing a little bit better this year, then perhaps we wouldn't be seeing Muguruza at this stage.
All right, the second women's semi-final, Venus Williams making history, making the semi-final against the UK Hope Konta, the betting on Matchbook. Aiden?
Yeah, so it's what a game yesterday. Konta and Halep was probably
epic
the game.
Stuff.
Well, the ladies' game in the tournament anyway.
Definitely.
And I said the thing that struck me was the Halep press conference where she's probably been the best player in the tour since Serena Williams has taken a break, and Simona Halep herself said that's probably the best she's ever played in grass, and she still didn't win. So that'll kind of tell you as much as you need to know about how well Joanna Konta is playing. So at the moment,
which is good, by the way, because the UK press are obviously going to hype up their player, so it's good to hear a rival opponent say actually that was sensational.
Exactly, yeah. She's slight favourite. I don't know. I'm not too sure. We'll talk about the outright maybe in a minute. But yeah, I think Konta needs to be the favourite for the outright. But for this game in particular, 189 and 2.1, so 11-10 Venus. It's amazing. 20 years since her debut.
Phenomenal.
Absolutely 1997. Phenomenal. I remember I was at Jessie May's 50th birthday. I remember.
She can get overshadowed by poor old Jesse, not even here to defend himself. She can get overshadowed by her illustrious sister, but she has had a phenomenal career, and the fact that she's still going strong.
Yeah, it's amazing.
In a semi-final of Wimbledon. I mean, this is not something that should be downplayed at all. It's remarkable, and she's not done yet. I mean, she could. She's the outsider here, but she could come through this. Mark, your views on Williams against Konta.
I think this is incredibly tough to choose who's going to win this. I mean, you've got the five-time Wimbledon champion against, as Aiden alluded to, one of the most consistent players currently on tour, and obviously the home favourite.
Yeah.
In terms of the crowd is going to be all over Konta, aren't they? You saw how much. Then you saw the match point in the Halep match where the crowd almost awarded the match to Konta by completely putting Halep off her stride. Mm. I mean, Halep's no excuse there, really. I mean, you know, you play to the whistle, so to speak. But the crowd is just going to be egging everything Konta's way. But Venus has looked superb to me. I mean, I was really intrigued to see how Ostapenko would carry on her French Open form, and she looked really good against Svitolina. She deservedly beat Svitolina in that match. She just carried on her ridiculously aggressive style, and I was interested to see how Venus would cope with that. And she coped with it really well. She came through straight sets, not too much dramas. She's only dropped one set of Venus. In comparison, do you think that Konta's had sort of like three battles, really? Obviously, the one against Halep, Garcia went to a final set, and obviously that one we discussed last week in round two against Donna Vekic, when she came through 8-6 in the last set. And this is going to be their sixth meeting, and Konta leads it narrowly 3-2. But the last time they met in Rome, Venus won in a final set decider, 6-1. I just not sure if there's anything to choose between either of these players. I think it could be a coin flip.
Well, when it is a coin flip, then are you better off taking Venus Williams as the bigger price, and therefore, if it's a coin flip and you think it's a 50-50 scenario, when you can get the bigger price on Venus, is she the one you automatically go for?
I suppose so, but I don't think our edge is that great, so yeah, maybe a small bet.
What about the games? The games market. The games market. Mark, 22.5. So it's 197 each side of that. Would you fancy kind of a long three setter there? Or
I think maybe that could, maybe could be the way to play, couldn't it? I mean, both of them are, have got good serves that aid well on the grass. So even if one of them went in straight sets, maybe. We could possibly see a tie break. I mean, obviously, Konta's match against Halep, that we saw two tie breaks there, and obviously that her match against Vekic was 8-6 in the final set. So yeah, maybe playing the over games is perhaps one way to go. I mean, just looking at their
career record.
I think four of the five matches would have gone over that 22.5 game line. So maybe that's the way to play it, really. But from my point of view, I think I'd just be swerving this match and just punting the other semi-final and hoping that hoping these two just play an epic game and tire each other out.
Yeah, and is that kind of pointing towards back in Rybakova in the outright then as well, Mark?
Yeah, I think that's a shrewd play, really. I mean, you look at the prices.
Yeah, she's the outsider in four, obviously, just over. Yeah, it's about 9.5 to back on Matchbook there. So it's 267 Muguruza, just under 5-2 Konta, 4.3 Williams, and then 9.5 Magdalena Rybakova.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a little bit simplistic way to look at it, but I think you could make an argument they should all be 3-1. You know, they've all got as good a chance as beating the other, I think. So and obviously Rybakova, I know there are any ITF titles, but she's already picked up two titles and she's beaten the favorite and the second favorite. So I still don't think the market's perhaps given her enough respect.
Let's briefly talk about the men's draw, because it's been thrown into complete and utter chaos. Federer is still on court, but looks
just
set to win.
Just won there, yeah, Emma. Yeah.
Fantastic. So Federer is now going to be a long odds-on favourite, I would imagine, in the outright market, Aidan.
It's just kind of settling back in. Yeah, he looks like he's going to be with threes on, though, I think, in the outright. It's going to be some kind of... It's just kind of... I suppose reforming there. So it's going to be probably threes on Federer, 4-1 Cilic, probably 20s or 25s Query, and then 10s or 12s Burdett. So
if you said 2 years ago Federer will be odds on favourite for Wimbledon, you'd have been laughed out of it. He looked like he was done, and here he is, the past master, back again.
And obviously the draw is just kind of, as you opened up from, in an extreme fashion today, as you said, so just the prices, again, just the match market's starting to form there. So it looks like it's going to be about, I'm looking at Cilic here, sorry, it's going to be, probably threes on Cilic. So 1-3 Cilic, and then Federer is going to be, it's just coming up there, it's going to be fives or sixes on, I'd say. 1-1-5, I reckon, Federer against Burdick. So any chance of taking him on, or any point of taking him on at this stage, Mark?
No, I don't think so. I said in the in our outright preview, he looks phenomenal to me, and I haven't seen anything over the past 10 days to suggest that he won't win. I mean, he hasn't dropped a set yet. He's just beaten Rynich in straight sets, who knocked him out in five last year. He beat Dimitrov, who obviously made the semis of Queens in straight sets fairly comfortably. He came up against a tricky player in Misha Zverev on Saturday, who served volleys, which has caused Federer problems at Wimbledon in the past. He got knocked out by Sergei Stakhovsky a few years ago, who's a serve volley player. But he dealt with him fairly sufficiently. He leads Burdick 19-6 on the head-to-head. Obviously, more recently, he's won their last eight, I think it is. And he's only dropped two sets in that time. I think Burdick probably could have done with the game against Djokovic today a proper match. I think he's think he'll come up against Federer, and I think Federer will just blow him away.
Sometimes it's not about the betting. Sometimes you just got to sit back and watch a genius at work, and
yeah,
that's what it's going to be.
100%. I think perhaps the value is going to be in the other match in Cilic v Querrey. Did you say Cilic is about 1.3, Aidan?
Just going up now. Yeah, 1.3-ish. I said it's just kind of settling there, Mark. Yeah, 3 is on, it looks like.
Yeah, I think, this is just going to be a little bit of a serve fest. Both massive players with two massive serves. As we've seen, Querrey came through against Anderson in the round 4. I can't really read too much into his match against Murray in terms of the matchup itself, because obviously Murray's not got a massive serve. But yeah, Querrey came through in 5 sets against Anderson the round before, and Cilic in a similar matchup against Jules Muller today has come through in 5 sets. So I think we could see something similar again here. So I think Cilic probably a little bit on the short side. He's beaten Querrey 4 out of 4, but they've all been really close matches. The last time they met was in Washington a couple of years ago, and Cilic won 2 tie breaks, 7-6, 7-6. They've actually played twice at Wimbledon, and both matches have gone to 5 sets.
Yeah, you can see that the total games has been marked up at like 40.5 at the moment. So that's obviously
over 40.5 games. I think that's a great bet. I mean, 2012, they met in the 3rd round. The 5th set was 17-15 for Cilic. So, you know, if we see a repeat of that, then you're home and dry. And that match had 3 tie breaks. So even if you have a straight sets win, you're still getting 39 games and of 3 lots of tie breaks. And I definitely think Querrey is capable of taking a set off Cilic. I mean, Cilic at Queens, he didn't drop one single service game, yet still didn't win the tournament despite making the final.
Yeah.
He's got a great serve, but his return is similar to a lot of big servers. It's slightly limited. So and Querrey, fair play to him. Give him a bit of credit for today. He definitely returned well. I think he hit 70 winners. I know Murray was incapacitated the sort of last couple of sets.
Yes,
he hit 70 winners past arguably the best returner in the game. I think he's ridiculously impressive. So I think Cilic should be a little bit bigger here.
Obviously beat Djokovic last year as well. Last year Querrey beat Djokovic for Cilic as well.
I think he'll go in with nothing to fear. So, I think Ober's games looks really good. They've played, just looking here, I think 15 sets, and the sort of differential in those sets has just been one single breaker serve. So I think this is going to come down to maybe 2 or 3 key points, and you could maybe see a very similar thing to Queens in terms of Cilic not dropping his serve, but the match still going the distance. So I think back in over games, and the line sounds quite low to me.
Yeah, sorry. There's a couple of lines. So the main line. Or that line, like, that's 40.5. So that's about just over 4 to 5. So 181. If you want to push it up to 42.5, you can get over even money. So 2.08 for over 42.5 games. And as I said, 1.81 for over 40.5 games.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it goes 4 sets, I think both will cop. So I think it just depends your style of betting, whether you're happy to concede another game for a slightly bigger price, or you're just happy to take the sort of the market level.
That's it. As you said, it's very hard to see, as I said, a 6-1 or 6-1, 6-2 set between these two players. So it's always going to be tight. One break a serve, if even, in a set. Yeah, Mark.
Especially as they're both going to have a day off tomorrow. I think a lot of people made out that Jules Muller was going to struggle heavily today because of the battle against Nadal. But unlike your sort of the ATP Tour events, where the competition is competed over a week, you're over 2 weeks here, and most of the time, bar Djokovic and Mannarino, you get a day off. So I don't think, I mean, these players are super fit and we're only in July, so we're only halfway through the tennis year.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll be having to worry anything about injuries like a couple of the players we've seen this week.
Excellent insight as always from Mark, and you can get more from him and the Matchbook newsletter, which is available for free. Mark, all you got to do is sign up at the Matchbook website. Tell us more about that.
So insights.matchbook.com. Just enter your email address, no other details required, and it's free. And it's going quite well. We delved into the Chinese Super League last weekend.
Yes.
There wasn't too much football.
Yeah, where all the action is happening.
You've got quite a lot of star names out there.
Oscar, all the big names.
Jim McGuinness.
Fabio Capello has just gone over there to manage the team that are bottom of the league.
Isn't Luis Felipe Scolari managing over there as well?
Yes, I believe so. Yes, yeah. He's out there as well. Gus Poyet, he's managing as well. He manages the team that Tevez plays for.
All the big names.
On a more important note, we had three bets last week, and if we hadn't had a last minute equaliser go against us, it would have been 3-3. But as it was, we were 2-3. But
that was the same thing in the MLS last week as well. You were so close to 3-3.
Yeah, but I can't argue too much because we did have a last minute goal go in our favour. So
no complaints.
I'm happy. Yeah, that was with a bigger bet as well. So that was definitely
brilliant.
Preferable.
All right, well, you can get those straight to your inbox. All you got to do is go onto the website insights.matchbook.com, where you can also find out more about the Matchbook Betting Podcast. Give your email address, and the free newsletter, which is invaluable from Mark Stitchcomb, will be in your inbox.
That's it.
And it has got some gold in there.
Can I hear Jesse's darts commentary?
Fox, I think it's on Fox Sports, I think, Mark. So
yeah.
I think you probably need one of those dodgy boxes.
You can watch it legitimately on Fox. There are alternative ways to watch, but we could not possibly comment on that.
Jesse May and John Part, what a partnership.
Fantastic.
That'll be incredible.
It actually will be incredible.
They'll be brilliant.
Yeah, genuinely.
I've commentated on poker with Jesse, and he's just so good as a commentator. He's absolutely brilliant. So, look, he'll have a blast. Is he going to be back next week is the big question, because he was supposed to be on this week. Promised us.
I think there's a bit of poker on over there as well, so it very depends how that goes.
The WSOP is well underway. So I have a feeling Aidan Barry will be returning to the Matchbook Betting Podcast studio next week.
Yep.
But if Jesse's here, fantastic. But I've a funny feeling for the Open that Aidan Barry's going to be here. But if Jesse's back, we'll be delighted to have him back.
We will, of course.
And I'm sure there'll be loads of Vegas stories. It's never Las Vegas. Vegas stories. If you are so inclined, a 5-star rating on iTunes would be much appreciated. It just helps to spread the word. Although we've been doing really well in the charts. Top 20 last week. Nicely done. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for all the kind words on social media as well. We really appreciate it. From Mark Stitchcomb.
Thanks, Emmett. Thanks, Aidan.
From Aidan Barry.
Thanks, Emmett.
And from me, Emmett Kennedy, we will chat to you again next week when we preview the Open on the Matchbook Betting Podcast. We'll talk to you then. Have a great weekend. God bless.